This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
But dude averages 18 yards after catch.
We get it. When you're passionate about something, you go all in. You live entirely in that world. That's exactly how Graybar is about renewable energy projects.
He's all fourth quarter, such a sleeper.
Join our league of clean energy at Graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
All right, everybody, it's here. The March to Spring Training and Opening Day is officially upon us. Hey, I'm Rob Bradford from Baseball Isn't Boring, and we'll have you covered every single day with instant reactions to late-breaking signings, determining which players are, yes, truly in the best shape of their lives, and behind-the-scenes stories from all the excitement and intrigue that spring training brings. Follow Baseball Isn't Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome in. It is overtime on 106.7 The Fan. Toby Altizer with you until 10 o'clock tonight. And if you were listening to End of the G&D, I don't know how you couldn't be fired up for some hockey tonight. I'm not the biggest hockey fan in the world. I pretty much watch the Capitals, and that's about it. But I'm fired up. As soon as you throw the USA across the chest, as soon as you're playing for your country, it adds that little bit of extra motivation. So tonight, USA-Canada, couldn't be more fired up than I am right now to get this game going on at about 8 o'clock tonight. So we'll keep you up to date on all that going on tonight. I want to dive into that a little bit deeper here in just a few minutes. Also want to talk about the Marshawn Lattimore discussion that G&D were having a little bit earlier. NFL.com put out an article Ian Rappaport had retweeted earlier today, kind of going through some potential cut candidates, and a little bit of a surprising name on there with Marshawn Lattimore. Is that legitimate, or is that something that, you know, you're kind of just going through making an article for NFL.com and you're just finding guys to make a little bit of sense cap-wise, how you can create some cap and just seeing? I don't know. But I want to dive into that coming up at 7 o'clock. Also want to get into some of the mock drafts around the various publications and what they have Washington taking at pick number 29. Also, how does this team find sustained success? There was something that Pete Prisco had said to Beamish and Finley last week, I believe it was, talking about sustained success and how this team can have it because of the quarterback. I want to talk about team-wise, how they build to that, and we'll get into some Nationals talk coming up at 9 o'clock. How would you grade the Nats offseason? And how excited are you for this Nats season? We'll get into that at 9 o'clock. But we got to start with USA-Canada. I'm fired up for this hockey game. I didn't care a whole lot going into this thing. You know, when this tournament started, it is what it is, right? And I heard a caller earlier talking about you had the Canada-Sweden game kind of showed that this wasn't just going to be a little pushover tournament where guys went out there and skated around a little bit and, you know, you're scoring 6 or 7 goals because no one's caring, and it's just you're going about the going through the motions of a hockey game but not actually playing hockey. Nope. This was full bore. And, you know, as soon as USA-Canada was going to be a matchup, that was going to be serious regardless. You knew those guys were going to go after each other. It's similar to a USA-Mexico in soccer or USA-England in something. It's always going to have that little bit of extra, especially when you get a sport like hockey where you're going up US-Canada. But the way that it fulfilled and exceeded expectations on Saturday night was awesome. You're tuning in to watch a hockey game, and if you tuned in 15 minutes late, you missed 3 fights. you missed three fights and probably missed the first goal for McDavid. I mean, it was so cool to see all the hype around this thing, all the talk, all the discussion, whichever side you're on, all the analysts talking about Canada and the beautiful style that they play and all this and that and this and that. And the United States and Canada did not let you down. And especially if you're an American, they did not let you down by winning 3-1. So cool. So cool. And I'm excited to see tonight when you get that rematch. You know, that game was in Montreal. You got all the extra stuff that comes with it, with the booing, the anthem, and all that stuff. And I'm excited to see what tonight holds. Are the Americans going to boo the anthem? The fans in Boston, are they going to boo Canada's anthem? Are they going to boo O Canada? Are the Canadian fans that are going to be in Boston, are they going to be booing the national anthem for the United States? What's going to be happening? I don't know. But I can't wait. At 8 o'clock tonight when that puck drops, are there going to be fights? Are guys going to be going at it? I don't know. You know, I feel like when you look back at that game, it's not the final. It's part of the group play. It matters, obviously, but it wasn't, you know, win or go home for that one. This one is. This one's for all the marbles. That one was not, and they had three fights in 9 seconds. Are they going to do that again tonight? I was talking with some guys around the office earlier today about it. You know, if it's a close game, I don't know that you see the same amount of fights. If it's 4-1 in the third period, though, hopefully the U.S. is up, and you got 3 or 4 minutes left, you might see the gloves drop a time or two. Just to let people know, just to give a little extra before the whole thing's over and you go back to your NHL team and you resume the NHL season. It's crazy. I'm so excited about this hockey game. And I remember chatting with Danny after the Super Bowl when I was filling in for GP. And we were talking about this. You have the Super Bowl end. And hockey immediately goes on a break for the Four Nations. And you have basketball go on the break for the All-Star game. And you're thinking, well, I don't know that this is a good idea for either league. And it turns out, genius for the National Hockey League. Genius for the NHL to do what they did. Because people are so into this. So into it. And it's up to the players to deliver. It's similar to the NBA All-Star game. You know, this could have been something where if they would have just gone out there and gone through the motions, then no one's going to make a big deal out of this. But the fact that these players care so much, a best-on-best tournament, these guys care for their countries. They want to go out there and show some pride. They want to go out there and win for the flag on their chest. It's cool seeing that. It's cool seeing that. And the NBA can't seem to figure out a way to get this sort of format, this sort of excitement, this sort of intensity brought in. But the NHL did a heck of a job where people are over the moon to watch this hockey game tonight. And, you know, outside of, I wasn't here in 2018, so I didn't get to experience the Caps run. So talking with people around the office about a hockey game, that just doesn't happen all that often. I'm sure it's happened for you, whether it's at your workplace or seeing people around or you and your buddies that, you know, I know some people are more diehard fans and they're checking all this stuff out. They're watching hockey all the time. That's not me. I'm a casual fan. I watch the Caps. Don't really watch much else in terms of hockey. But this one, you're dialed in for. I love watching Olympic hockey, 2014, TJ Sochi, right? And all the crazy moments from that. 2018 didn't quite live up to it. But thinking of what this does to set up next year's Olympics, when you're going to have a full field, you're going to have a bigger tournament than just these four teams. It's been awesome. And I think the rivalry, the way that these guys take it so seriously, I don't know that the NHL expected this. I don't know that they understood what they had walked into and what they had discovered. Because the other thing, too, is some people are saying, oh, you got to do this every year. You got to have something like, you can't do it every year because then it's not special. I know it sucks because you want to do what's working, what's super popular all the time. But the more you do something like that, you're going to kind of diminish its value a little bit. So this can't be an every year occurrence. Instead of the All-Star game, obviously you're going to have the Olympics mixed in there every 4 years. But it's been really, really good the first time they've done it. Maybe this is something where you alternate every 2 years. You play an All-Star game 1 year, you play the Four Nations or a World Cup of Hockey type thing. And the next year, you go back to the All-Star game, then you go to the Olympics, and you kind of just go through that cycle. Whatever it is, though, this has been awesome. This has been something that's been appointment television where I've never literally never in my life gone out of my way to watch an NHL All-Star game. I'm not watching the Skills Challenge. I'm not watching any of that. I enjoy hockey, but I'm very casual as a fan. I understand that. This is something I was seeking out. This is something I wanted to see. And so tonight, it's going to be a great spectacle. I cannot wait to watch this. And hopefully we hear a lot of free bird and a lot of goals for the Americans. That's what I'm hoping for. Ben, you're hanging out with us tonight. Are you a big hockey guy? What was your level of excitement going into the tournament? What's your level of excitement now that you got the final USA and Canada after what happened Saturday night?
I'm a Caps guy, so everything about me hockey-wise is pretty much just focused on the Capitals. I'm not a huge puck knower. I won't claim to be. I won't tell anyone that I know a lot about hockey. It's just not my thing. Commanders obviously going a deep playoff run, so I'm so heavily invested in that. The Wizards are terrible, so I'm not focused on that. And the Commanders get blown out in the NFC Championship game. Like, all right, Caps are the best team in hockey.
Mm-hmm.
And then this tournament comes about, and I was like, I wasn't even really aware of it, but I was at my other job watching the first couple minutes of the USA-Canada game with all the fights. I was like, okay, yeah, this is pretty cool. So I'm pretty hyped up about this. I'll say I'm glad there's no Capitals playing in it, because I think that's going to give us an advantage after the break is over, heading into the final stretch of the season here. So really hoping for a USA win, of course, and then for the Capitals to roll after this tournament.
Yeah, I think what you bring up about the Capitals not being in it, I totally agree. Like, watching some of these dudes just get crushed up against the boards, I don't need to see Tom Wilson out there for Canada. He deserves to be out there, by the way. There's no way you can tell me that the team that's second in the league in points, that has been an aberration in a lot of ways. You've got one of the best goaltenders in the league, if not the best, this season, in Logan Thompson. You've got great players all over the ice. And I understand some of it, like, they don't have Russia, so Ovi's not going to be a part of it. I get that. But you're telling me Tom Wilson, John Carlson, Logan Thompson, one of those guys couldn't crack a lineup? That's a little frustrating. And then I remember that they're back home, sitting on their couch, watching these guys get plastered up against the boards, and they're going to be good to go Saturday against the Pens.
Could you imagine what Tom Wilson would be doing in these games? I mean, the reason I love Tom Wilson so much, and I've always really liked him, because I always saw him as the goon of the Capitals. He was always the guy that would get into it with the guys' best players on the other team. And, man, if he were out there for the first couple minutes of that last USA-Canada game, I don't know if they'd be able to finish the game.
Yeah, well, and that's what I'm going to be interested in tonight, is to see what kind of environment we get. Are there going to be fights? Are there going to be... Hopefully the U.S. wins. But I thought it was a really well-played game for both sides, honestly. It's just U.S. came out on top, but I thought it was a really well-played hockey game. The style of this hockey game, I think, is going to be a lot of fun, because, you know, it's one thing to watch the same team all the time, but this is the best players in the world all put on the same team together. You're getting up and down, up and down, up and down. Great chances all over the ice. It's been a lot of fun to watch. Been really, really cool. So we'll keep you updated throughout the night. That drops at 8 o'clock, and we'll give you some updates as that one goes on. The other thing I wanted to talk about before we dive into the Commanders coming up at 7 o'clock with the potential of a Marshawn Lattimore move is you've seen two colleges join now a third college in canceling their spring games. So Nebraska was first in this. Texas and USC followed suit today. They're canceling their spring games. And something has to be done in college sports. I think we all know this. I think we all understand this. And you can choose NIL, you can choose transfer portal, you can choose whatever you want. There are problems in college sports, and they need to be addressed and fixed. Texas and USC canceling their spring games, joining Nebraska, is just a shame. It's a shame. And it's a huge missed opportunity for players and fans to get to enjoy their team. I know some people... My buddy lives in Columbus, a buddy from college. My buddy lives in Columbus, diehard Ohio State Buckeyes fan, as just about everybody in Columbus would be. I took him to his first game when I lived in Wisconsin. We went down to Northwestern, and we watched him play Ohio State. He had never gone to Ohio Stadium. He'd never been to the Shoe to watch a football game because, frankly, going to an Ohio State football game, unless you want to go watch them play Akron week one, is just really not affordable. So what did he get to see? And he talked to me about and how thrilled he was. He got to go to a spring game, right? I know it's not a real game. I get all that. But you get to see your guys. It's like a preseason game of sorts, because you don't get that in college football. It's just a cool environment. The fact that three schools, and I'm sure others will follow suit, will cancel their spring game. And the reason being, Matt Rhule kind of laid this out. They're canceling their spring game because they don't want, with this prevalent transfer portal, and I don't even know that the transfer portal is the issue as much as the tampering that is allowed within the transfer portal is absurd. Matt Rhule talked about how he's going to have a spring game, and he's going to have some kid that people aren't really talking about, people aren't really scouting, they don't really understand who this kid is, he's kind of just back end of the roster guy, he's going to have a heck of a game, and all of a sudden, Ohio State comes calling about this receiver, or someone else comes calling about this DB, or someone else is calling about this defensive end, and all of a sudden, my roster that I wanted to have a fun exhibition for the fans, I wanted to have a fun exhibition for my players in the spring to get ready for the fall, all of a sudden, I'm decimated. I got two or three guys leaving. I got four and five guys leaving, all because I had a spring game where you got some film on guys. That's a problem in college football. It's a problem that you can't have that. And there are things that need to be fixed. I understand, and I'm not the one getting paid the big bucks, so I'm not going to try to come up with some solution right now. I know they're trying to work on some of the NIL stuff. And I think the issue for college football and college sports in general is they ran into two problems that are massive, and they ran into them at the same time, and that's how you get where you're at in college football. NIL is a problem. There's no question in my mind that it's a problem. I'm not saying players shouldn't get paid. I'm 100% for it. But when they initially said that NIL was going to be a thing, NIL to me was not supposed to say, hey, we're going to pay this guy $5 million to come to our college. Yes, that's going to be part of it. But part of it is, hey, man, you weren't getting paid by the local car dealership that was willing to sponsor you. Now you can. That to me what it's all about. When all of a sudden you start pooling money together and saying, hey, here's $4 million. Come play at our school. Here's this. When you have guys blatantly entering the transfer portal saying, show me the money. I'll go to your school. I don't care about fit. I don't care what I got. Just give me the most money. I'm coming there. I think of Hunter Dickinson when he left Michigan, going to Kansas. That's essentially what he said in the portal. I was only making six figures at Michigan. Now I'm making millions. I don't feel bad for you making six figures at Michigan, dude. I really don't. Now you're going to Kansas. Good for you, but that's not how the system is supposed to work. That's not what it's supposed to be about. And so that has to be fixed. And you ran into the problem where NIL's an issue and the transfer portal's an issue. I don't doubt that you should be able to move schools. I'm not saying that's a thing. But you can't just move every single year. Like they talk about now, coaches talk about, it's essentially one-year contracts for every player for every season. You know how the Commanders are having to deal with this, where there's 29 free agents they have to make a decision on? What if all 53 were free agents, and you had to convince Jaden to come back? You had to convince Terry to come back? You had to convince all these dudes to come back? That's essentially what college sports has turned into, where every single dude is now his own thing, which is great, by the way. I think for the players, this is awesome, but it's a problem, and it has to be fixed. And I think you're just seeing little byproducts of this where we understand that college sports is different right now, and I think at some point this is going to level out and we're going to get back to some sort of normalcy in college sports, but it's not right now when you have three colleges canceling spring games, something that a lot of fans really look forward to, maybe not here as much because this area isn't crazy about college football, but think about down south. Think about some of these places where they don't have a professional team and they're fired up for their college team to have a spring game, and they're going to go and they're going to check these guys out, first chance to see some of these dudes. But no, they can't do it because their college is scared that their guys are going to get picked off and taken out of their roster. I just don't love that. Something needs to be fixed there. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, Marshawn Lattimore was mentioned in an NFL.com article saying that he could be a potential cut candidate. Do you buy that? 800-636-1067 on the MGM National Harbor Listener Lines. You can also tweet at me at Toby_Altizer, where I give you my thoughts and maybe some of the reasoning why that could happen next here on The Fan.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Alo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Welcome back. It is Overtime on 106.7 The Fan. Toby Altizer with you until 10 o'clock. So I want to take a look at this article from NFL.com where, let's see, who was this? It was Matt Okada of NFL.com had looked through some potential cuts in the NFC, cut candidates that may be a little bit surprising. So just taking a look through some of these. Debo, we kind of knew about that. Cam Jordan, Derek Carr, Tyler Lockett, David Onyemata or Grady Jarrett for the Falcons, Jonah Jackson of the Rams, one of the linebackers that the Bears brought in recently, Tremaine Edmonds or TJ Edwards, Noah Fant, tight end for the Seahawks, Miles Sanders, James Bradbury or Big Play Slay in Philly, Taysom Hill, Gerald Everett. Maybe the most surprising name on this list for the Commanders was Marshawn Lattimore. And the reason being, Marshawn was just acquired in a trade. Just brought in a trade to help this team out in the corner position. And now they're talking about him as a potential cut candidate. Now, the reason that he could definitely be a cut candidate and why he's on this list is because of his contract and because of the ability to get out of it. Now, I understand that they just acquired him, but he wasn't good. Like, if we're just being frank, he wasn't very good this season. He is going to be getting $18 million, and if the Commanders were to move on from him, they have no dead cap. None. It would literally save them $18 million. So if they were to cut him from now until March 16th, according to SpotTrack, they'd save $18 million and have no dead cap hit. If they were to move on after March 16th and until June 1st, then it'd be a $16 million cap hit, $2 million in dead cap. They're obviously not going to do that. I understand that. Every other move, whether it's a release post-June 1, pre-June 1, in that outside of that window, a trade, they'd save $18 million. And so, first thought on this, you think, this is foolish. And it does sound kind of foolish, where you think, okay, you just acquired this guy to go get him. You just went and said, we need to improve the secondary, which is clearly a thing that needs to be done. But you're now going to move on? And I think the reason that you could do this is some of these corners who are free agents. So if you just look through some of these top 100 lists, Charvarius Ward could potentially be available. You have DJ Reed could potentially be available. Carlton Davis is out there as available. Guys like that, maybe you want to go get one of those and say it didn't work with Lattimore, and that's how you can get over it, and that's how you can move on. And you say, okay, we save $18 million. That $18 million can go towards whoever the new corner is. That $18 million can be spread around. But the problem I have with this is Marshawn Lattimore, when you compare it to guys who would be available. So according to the 33rd team, their fifth best player in free agency is DJ Reed, corner from the Jets. Their 11th best is Charvarius Ward, corner from the 49ers, who doesn't sound like he wants to go back to San Francisco for personal reasons. Is Lattimore better than those guys? And I think that's a tough question to ask. And I think it's a tough question to answer. Because when you look at Lattimore, you want to say yes. The answer should be yes. This is a guy that was one of the best corners in football not that long ago. But what you saw last season, can you say yes? I don't know that you can. Lattimore was not good last season. He just frankly wasn't. Now, I don't know how it made you feel that when A.J. Brown's in the Super Bowl kind of tearing up Trent McDuffie a little bit. Maybe it made you feel a little bit differently about Marshon Lattimore, because McDuffie's one of the best in the league, and he was getting cooked by A.J. Brown. Obviously, the same thing was happening to Marshon Lattimore. He was getting beat by Mike Evans in the playoffs. Thought he played okay against Detroit. Thought he played fine, obviously, when he first came back against the Saints. So he had some games where he was okay. But overall, you acquired this guy to be a number one corner, to go against number one receivers. And my issue is, if it's the injury thing, then that's fine. But this guy's always injured. Like he's someone that when you acquired him, you knew he had an injury history. You knew he struggled. And it's not like it's something where one time it's a hand injury, another time it's an ankle, another time it's a knee, another time it's hamstring, 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 hamstring. And what was the problem last year? Hamstring. And so to pretend like, okay, well, maybe, you know, he just wasn't fully healthy when they rushed him back or this, that. What's to say that's going to happen next year? Not going to happen again. Like, what's to say that he's not going to get out on the field and maybe play well for 4 weeks, tweak the hammy, and then you're doing the same song and dance over again where you're saying, well, the hamstring's bothering him and he's not the same guy. Well, that's a bit of a problem. I'm hoping that this was an anomaly of a season. I'm hoping that this year was something that you can look back and say, well, that's not the Marshon Lattimore that we expected. That's not the Marshon Lattimore that they thought they were acquiring. But that being said, it'll be okay. I don't know. I still think this is a little bit crazy, in my opinion, to say that you're going to move on. When you look at what they gave up, you think it's a little bit more than what you'd like to give up for someone that you're just going to ultimately move on from. So just revisiting the trade, Washington gave up a third, fourth, and sixth in this upcoming draft in exchange for Lattimore and a fifth. That being said, that's not an unreasonable amount that you could say, we can't cut this guy after all we gave up. The most you gave up was a third, the best pick. That sucks, but you can still recoup that. You still have a third-round pick for this year. So you could still make up for it if you were to say, we'd rather save the $18 million. But this comes back to the same conversation I think we've had multiple times on this station about John Allen and Daron Payne. Specifically, John Allen, to me, when you look at the number that you can save for him very easily is about $10 million. Okay, so you save the $10 million, but who are you replacing him with? I think you can find a replacement for $10 million, no question about it. You can probably find him for half that. But are you sure that you're going to get the replacement, the same level of production? Might not be as high as you'd like for someone getting paid what he's getting paid. But believe it or not, he's still a probably above-average defensive tackle. Even though he's not the elite guy that you paid, he's still at least above average, even if it's only slightly. So in order for me to feel good about saying, let's move off of John Allen, you've got to bring someone in that helps you in the similar way. Because you already have 75 plus million in cap space with those guys on the books. So yeah, you might get to 85, and that's great. That's nice to see that big number where you can go spend. But if you're not actually going to improve that position, then I don't know that it's fully worth it. That kind of goes back to Marshon Lattimore here. You've got 75 of effective cap space according to Over the Cap. 75 million. If you move on, you can get up to 93 million. But how much does that change? What are you going to do? Or does that suddenly allow you to go get someone at the corner position? Does that allow you to change things? Do you have to change your draft strategy? I don't know. And that's why I don't know that this makes the most sense. I think there is, let me put this out there first. I don't think this could happen. I really don't. I don't think when you look at the options that they have, what they gave up to get him, I don't think they're going to view any of the guys in free agency and think, you know what, if we go out and save this $18 million and go sign this guy, I don't know that they're going to suddenly feel better about their secondary than if they just say, let's give Marshon a full offseason, let's get him healthy, let's get him used to the group, let's get him used to the defense, let's get him fully ingrained in the Commander culture, and then make a full assessment. I don't think they're going to suddenly feel better about that. And by the way, this gives you nice flexibility at the corner position. It does. Because this is going to be the same thing next offseason, where if Lattimore's bad, you can just cut him, and it doesn't hurt you. If you were to say, I'm going to move on from Lattimore, and I'm going to go sign Charvarius Ward, or I'm going to move on from Lattimore, and I'm going to go get DJ Reed, you're not going to have that same option where if you bring them in and suddenly they're just not that same guy, they're diminishing return, you can't just cut them. This gives you some flexibility there. And so you've got a guy whose potential is a number one shutdown corner. We saw that at times he was very, very bad last season. But I think if you're able to help him up front with some of the guys on that defensive front where you're able to actually get a pass rush, I think he'll be okay. But I think this is a little bit of an indictment on Marshon Lattimore that he's even on this list on NFL.com. $18 million for a number one corner who is a potential shutdown guy is not that bad. It's not. You would take that in a heartbeat. If you told me today that Washington was able to sign any of these top two to three guys at the corner position, another name available, Asante Samuel Jr., someone like that. If you told me you could sign DJ Reed or Charvarius Ward or maybe even Asante Samuel Jr. for somewhere around 2 years and $35, $36 million, which essentially is what the 2 years is for Marshon Lattimore, you'd sign up for that, right? That's not that bad of a deal. You're not having to go into the 20s. You're not having to overpay. You're fine with that deal. That's what Marshawn's here for, and that's what he's here on. So I'm not just moving off of that. I don't think there's much of a chance that they move on from him. What do you say? 800-636-1067. You want to hop in on the MGM National Harbor listener lines. NFL.com talking about some potential surprising cuts. Some cut candidates that maybe we're not thinking about right now. They list one for Washington, and it's Marshon Lattimore. The Commanders would save $18 million against the cap if they were to move on. Would that make sense to you? Should they make the move? 800-636-1067. You want to hop in? We'll continue talking about it next here on The Fan. Interesting name popped up today in an NFL.com article taking a look at potential cut candidates this offseason. Name that Washington just acquired, Marshon Lattimore. Is he someone that Washington could move on from this offseason? I personally don't think, if I had to give it a percentage chance, it's less than 10, probably somewhere around 5. I just don't see it happening. I don't think you go out there and make the aggressive move at the deadline and just then decide to move on because you need the cap space, when frankly, you don't need the cap space. If you had a bigger plan at the corner position this offseason where, okay, we went, we swung. Look, I also wouldn't blame them if they were to say we need to move on because it just didn't work out. I'm not going to fault them for saying, horrible trade, stupid move, Adam Peters, you suck. No, I'm not going to do any of that. Right? I like the fact that they were judicious in it. They understood, look, we need to go make a move to improve because suddenly we're better than we thought. But we also don't want to sell the farm. And they didn't. I know some people look at it and say, well, they gave up too much of this. It's a third-round pick. It's a fourth-round pick. I get that that's valuable. I understand how valuable that is. But it's not like they gave up a first. Like, so we don't need to overreact about it. But what say you? Is there a potential that you would move on? Do you think that'd be foolish? Do you think they could look at other options? 800-636-1067. MGM National Harbor listener lines are open. Let's get out to Larry, who is in D.C. Larry, what's going on?
Man, you know, I listen to you when y'all flip-flop, but, you're on the nail on the late night. You know, I know both of y'all grinding, trying to make y'all bones, man, and I respect that. I like to see prospects, you know, and good talent grow even on the radio personality because they help us as fans.
I appreciate
you. Doing stuff, so appreciate you, man, and what you bring. But, real quick, and like you were saying earlier and yesterday, a couple of days ago, you guys were doing, I think we should probably trade back, make the move, but like you just said, Marshon Lattimore is not bad. He was hurt coming back, different situations. I think if you put yourself, you know, in a situation where you say you can pay 14, 15 million, 16 million for a guy of that level, and, you know, that's why a lot of times guys don't want to get traded in the season because the comfortability, injury, different things. Mm-hmm. Sometimes, you know, it doesn't work, you know, in the middle of the season getting, you know, at that level. That's why Kevin Durant didn't want to get traded. But saying that is look at it like this. If Washington trades that pick and moves back to the 33rd pick that Cleveland has and gets the 33rd pick in the other two third rounds, we give them our first round pick because they can still come back and get a quarterback and get that fifth year option. you know, Jackson Dart or, you know, yours, whoever you like. I want, that's part of the question, who you like at that third quarterback. We know they're top two or so, but they can get Abdul Carter at number two, reset, save some money from Myles Garrett. You're going to get some more money saved from Deshaun Watson, and then we give them our third round with Jonathan Allen, who's going to be expiring contract. And they can get a guy like a Justin Fields, who played in Ohio at Ohio State, coming in at a little bit less than Gardner Minshew money, $14, $15 million, somewhere in there. And we get Myles Garrett and three or four picks, and we'll give them a fourth or fifth next year. It depends on, you know, how we sign Myles Garrett.
Sure.
But I think that's the move to make. That's definitely the move to make. What do you think?
Yeah, Larry, appreciate the phone call. I would like to see them be in on the Myles Garrett thing. I kind of go back and forth on this because everyone wants to go all in, and I get that. This team was just in the NFC Championship. But I also think you have to be smart about this, where you don't want to go all in year two and forget the fact that you've still got three more years after that with Jaden on a rookie deal. So you don't want to go in year two and lose some of those assets, and suddenly year four and year five are a little bit compromised, and you're missing positions that now you just don't have assets to go get those guys, right? So, you know, if you trade two first-round picks and suddenly next season you're looking, you still need a wide receiver too, or you still need another corner, or that maybe that offseason you move on from Lattimore if he's not any better and you need a corner and you don't have a first-round pick, or you still need another edge rusher, or you need a D-tackle, or whatever it may be, offensive tackle. I don't know that I love moving off too many assets, but when you get a guy like Myles Garrett who's available, wouldn't blame him at all for being aggressive. So I kind of go back and forth. I'm kind of fine either way on that one. You know, I don't have to have them be ultra aggressive and go get him. You know, something that we were discussing a little bit here earlier today, just hanging out, talking with the guys in a break. I don't love operating this way, but you almost want to go get him so he doesn't go somewhere else. I don't necessarily love operating that way as a general manager. I want to make my team the best, and I'll worry about everyone else when I need to worry about everyone else. But I don't know. Is it worth giving up a little bit extra, making sure he doesn't end up in Philadelphia, so you have to play him twice a year, combined with Jalen Carter? Maybe. Is it worth giving up a little bit extra to make sure he doesn't go to Detroit, so hopefully when you meet them in the playoffs down the line that you're not having to go against Aiden Hutchinson and Myles Garrett? Maybe. I don't necessarily love operating that way, but it sure would help that he's not on your opponent and he's on your side. He would definitely help you out, but he wouldn't be helping them, which maybe helps you twofold. So maybe it is a little bit worth it. One thing I wanted to hit here before we move on from this and get into some other Commanders topics, because I saw something on Twitter, maybe we'll dive into Jeremy Fowler talking about the wide receiver position. We'll dive into that a little bit later. Also getting into some mock draft stuff as well. One thing that I don't love that we do as fans, we do it in media, we do this all the time, and I think part of the reason this becomes a big discussion is the emergence of how big sports is, right, and talking about contracts and all these things. People are playing Madden, they're playing 2K, they're playing MLB The Show and all these different things. We do this all the time with contracts. You do this in fantasy at times, right? And we talk about value, right? We talk about how important getting the right value is. And sometimes we get a little too nitpicky on these things where, okay, $18 million is a little bit too much, but $15 would be perfect. That's a $3 million difference. I understand for me and you, $3 million is a lot when it comes to a National Football League team and deciding on a contract. Not as big a deal. I'm not saying it's nothing, but sometimes what we do with these things and we say, well, is Lattimore really worth $18? Well, the way he played this year, probably not. Is it worth 12? This is kind of the issue I had with the Finnegan discussion, where this offseason the Nationals decided to non-tender Kyle Finnegan, and people are all in my mentions saying, you were so foolish, he would have got too much money. My issue wasn't necessarily with Finnegan, is the fact that you weren't willing to go to 8 when you probably would have been willing to do 5. We're talking about $3 million. Not that much. Let's be real, pay some money, right? So sometimes when you do these things, and I think this comes back to the John Allen and some of these different cap casualties that you could look at for Washington, yeah, you could maybe save a few bucks, but is it really worth it when you maybe don't have the player on your team? And so for Marshawn Lattimore, you want to move on for $18 million and say, great, we got $18 million. Where's that $18 million going? I don't necessarily want to move on from Lattimore for nothing. Not to say that, you know, you couldn't go get Charvarius Ward and feel good about that. But to save $18 million, doesn't do me a whole lot. You still need to improve the football team. So I don't really think it makes a whole lot of sense this offseason. I think this is a legitimate discussion next offseason if we see the same Marshawn Lattimore. Heck, maybe if it gets real bad in season, maybe this is a discussion in season. But I don't think it is right now. I don't think moving on from Marshawn Lattimore would make much sense for this team, because are you going to move on from him? Who's suddenly going to be your cornerback one? Now you all of a sudden become desperate at that position. You're not desperate right now. You want to improve. You'd like to see another corner come in and be better, but you're not desperate. You move on from Lattimore, suddenly all you've got is Sanders still and you're desperate. So I wouldn't love that. Real quick before we change topics here, Ben, what's your thoughts on this?
Well, Lattimore's the least of my concerns when it comes to cap casualties on this Washington team. When I think of guys that are eating too much of the cap that I wish they could get rid of, think of Andrew Wiley, Daron Payne, and Jonathan Allen, because, well, Wiley's kind of just an easy choice to pick on at this point. He's been with the team the past 2 years, and I wasn't sure he was even going to be back this year, and he did improve this year a little bit, but I think he's definitely a candidate. I believe it's like $8 million they would save or something to get rid of him. Allen and Payne obviously have not produced enough for this football team based on the money that they are being paid. But Adam Peters made this decision to go get Lattimore in the middle of the season because they knew they had a guy in Jaden Daniels. They could see the vision of where this football team was going, and they were desperate. They had Benjamin St. Juice getting cooked on a weekly basis as your top outside corner, and that just couldn't happen anymore. They had to go make this move because this team was ready to win games, win meaningful games, and they got all the way to the NFC Championship game. You make that move because he has 2 years left on his contract as well. And I don't think that's something that Adam Peters and them would take in mind and say, yeah, we'll just rent him and then, you know, cut him to save the $18 million. I think the plan to get him, of course, is use him because you have a potential to make a Super Bowl run right here. But you want that guy as one of your liable corner options for the next 2 years on this right. football team. And you brought up a great point saying, you know, if you get rid of Marshawn Lattimore, then all of a sudden you are desperate at that position again, unless you address it in the draft. And yes, they gave up three picks and got one back as part of it. But Marshawn Lattimore is a guy that has played all pro football in the National Football League. The hamstring injury is obviously a concern, but I'm not ready to give up on him because of that. I think the hamstring, you give him the entire offseason to try to work through that and get back to the level of health that he might be at in previous years. But it's not easy as a defensive back to switch teams in the middle of the year, learn the entire defense. And, you know, I'm not a huge X's and O's guys, but, you know, that's just my take on it. And I think Lattimore's a guy that hasn't played his best football in Washington, very obviously, based on how he played. But that doesn't mean I'm ready to give up on him. I think he could still be one of the best players on this defense for the next 2 years, and they're going to need him to step up.
Yeah, 100%. And I think one of the things, too, like you said in there, he's a guy that has played at that level. I don't know that I want to move on from him and go get DJ Reed or go get Charvarius Ward, who are very good players in their own right. But if we were to ask which one of those guys is the best, it is Lattimore, like we talked about to begin this thing. So I'm going to take my chances. Doesn't work out, it doesn't work out. But I think right now where they're at, you take your chances with Lattimore, and hopefully that injury was something that he dealt with this season. Also, when you talk about that trade, I think a lot of people are saying, oh man, that was a loss. When they made the trade, to me, you obviously acquire a guy in the middle of a season for him to play the end of that season. That was a little bit of a loss there. But if he comes out the next 2 years and plays really well, then that trade's still a win. So a lot of that is still ahead of us to see. If he can play well this season, and then he can play well next season, then that trade is well worth it. Well worth it. Obviously, it sucked when you had a team that went to the NFC Championship and your number one corner who you acquired via trade was not playing like that. I get that. But at the same point, these next 2 years are why he was acquired. That's a big part of it. You wanted him to help down the stretch. That didn't work. But he's still got two more years. You see what happens. And you can kind of make this decision. I think you make this decision next season. This is next offseason's decision. And even if he plays really well, maybe that is something you have to make a decision next offseason, depending upon some of the maneuvering of the cap and moves they make this offseason. So I think that's more of a legitimate discussion next year than this year. I want to talk about sustainable success for this team. How do they build a winner that is consistently in the conversation as one of the best teams in the NFC, as one of the teams that when we talked about San Francisco, you talk about Kansas City, you talk about some of these teams in their respective conferences, every single year you go into it, a preview show on NFL Network or ESPN or wherever you're checking things out, listening here, we're saying, who are the real threats for the Super Bowl in that conference? How does Washington make it so that every year we're talking, well, you've got the Niners, you've got the Eagles, you've got the Commanders. How are they always in that discussion? How do they build that sustainable winner? 800-636-1067 if you want to hop in. I'll give you some of my ingredients next here on The Fan. Welcome back. It is overtime on The Fan. Toby Altizer with you till 10 o'clock. So I want to get into this discussion. We had this a little bit the other day on overtime, talking about sustainable success. How does Washington build a winner that is constantly in the discussion? Where, you know, as a general manager, to me, your job is to put the best roster on the field and then let the coach do his thing. I think, you know, for the years of 2012 to 2019, the Nationals did a good job of this, where they were good year in, year out, year in, year out. They were good. How does Washington, the Commanders, get to that level where they're constantly in it? Not guaranteeing that they're going to go to a Super Bowl, not guaranteeing that they're going to win, but in order to win a Super Bowl, you got to get into the playoffs first. I thought this clip, this cut from Pete Prisco, he's on with B. Mitch and Finley. I think this was last week some point. I can't remember exact date, but he was on with B. Mitch and Finley. JP asked him how much is sustainable, and you'll love this answer from Pete Prisco.
Commanders go 12-5 regular season, get to the NFC title game. How much of their success do you think, from a national perspective, is sustainable?
All of it, because of the quarterback.
That guy
keeps you relevant. You know, there's always the, and I call them the aberration seasons, where a team doesn't have a franchise quarterback, and the ball bounces their way, they play really good defense, they run the ball, the line plays good, they don't have a ton of injuries, the mistakes don't go against them, they go with them, and that team ends up playing, you know, in the playoffs. But then it disappears, and then you're gone. You don't have sustainable success.
Minnesota.
The Commanders have sustainable success because they have that guy.
Yep.
He does that to them, for them, and it will make them relevant for the next 12 to 15 years because of Jaden Daniels.
And so to me, when it comes to sustainable success, because you've got the quarterback like Pete Prisco says there, it's now Adam Peters' job to put the roster in the right spot, right? That's his job. Jaden's going to do his thing. It's making sure that the rest of the roster is in order to help Jaden, to have a defense for Jaden, all those things. Now that you've found the hardest thing to get in the National Football League, the hardest thing maybe to find in all of sports is a franchise quarterback. Now that you assume you found that guy, right? It's only been 1 year, but you assume you found that guy. How do you build that winner? How do you build that team that, like Pete Prisco said there, is around for 12 to 15 years for the entirety of Jaden's career, where they're playing for Super Bowls, they're winning rings, right? And you never want to take for granted that just because they went to the NFC Championship, just because they had so much success in year one, that that's something that's just going to happen year after year. I've told this example before, but you know, in my time in Milwaukee, people just assumed with the Green Bay Packers when Aaron Rodgers went to the Super Bowl and won in 2010 and Super Bowl 45, that he'd be back. He'll be back. We'll go again. And they never did. So you never want to take for granted that all of a sudden, just because you have success in 1 year, that that's going to become the new norm. But if you're able to continue to build and build and build this roster up, how do you find a way to make sure that it's something that year after year, you're in the conversation, and you'd be happy if you could trade places with what Washington has been the last couple years, with Baltimore, with San Francisco? They haven't won. They haven't won a Super Bowl, but they've been right there seemingly every year. And you'd rather be saying, I'd rather try to get over the hump versus saying, well, we're never in it, right? So Washington now seems to be in the spot where they can get over the hump. They're right there. How do you get to that next step? How do you take that next step? But making sure you at least get to that level is super important. So how do you find a way to build that sustainable winner? 800-636-1067 if you want to hop in on the MGM National Harbor listener line. So when we talked about this the other day, people really dove into the offense and defensive line. And I think that's a big part. There's some other things I want to get into here, but that one's a big one. Fortifying both lines. And every year, the team that wins the Super Bowl people are going to find ways to either emulate that roster or find ways where they have to counter that roster. If you learned anything from this year's Super Bowl, it's the importance of the line of scrimmage on offense and defense. Plain and simple. Sometimes we like to break stuff down and be super complex and make this game as difficult as it possibly can be. And then sometimes it's as easy as, if my dudes up front are better than your dudes up front, I'm going to win. And that's what it looked like in the Super Bowl. My dudes up front, if I'm Philadelphia, are going to crush your dudes up front if you're Kansas City, and there's nothing you can do about it. And frankly, that's what that Super Bowl looked like. And so fortifying both the O-line and the D-line is hugely important. I think we understand that. But just some philosophical things here that I think if you're going to build a sustainable winner, you need to have these things in order. Number one, and we've seen this, and I don't think there's any coincidence that the first year in my lifetime that this team has accomplished really anything of note and a season that you could really, really be proud of was this season where this happened. You need organizational alignment and a proper structure. You need an organization to understand that these guys are all working together. You don't have the owner pulling one way, the general manager pulling another way, the head coach pulling another way, the quarterback going another way. You need alignment. And if I think you could say anything about this team this season, they were aligned on one singular focus. Josh Harris, the minority owners, Adam Peters, Dan Quinn, Joe Witt and Cliff Kingsbury, Jaden Daniels, they were all aligned. I don't think it's any coincidence that when that finally happened, this team started winning. And the proper structure is a big part. Now, this team has finally, in my lifetime, for the first time, set up a proper structure where seemingly the owner stays out of the football ops. He likes to know what's going on, but he's not constantly making decisions. He's not calling in from his yacht. Hey, draft this dude. The general manager is in charge of the roster. He's the one making the roster decisions. He's the one making the decision on the quarterback and who to cut and who to move on from, who to trade for. He's working with the coach, but he has final say, the general manager. The coach is coaching these players up. That structure is the one that works, not a coach-centric approach, not we have our buddy as the general manager, but really we're the general manager as the owner. Not that stuff. You need proper structure. So you've seen that. This next one is huge because this is why Washington is in the spot that it's in. This is why this offseason becomes really pivotal and really hard for me when we talk about Myles Garrett, T. Higgins, any of these big-time price tag guys, whether it's in trade or free agency. The reason that I'm a little hesitant to do any of those things is this reason right here. You have to nail the draft. You have to nail the draft. And specifically, you have to nail the first three rounds. Because I think when you look at the first three rounds of an NFL draft, number one, in the first round, you're looking at a big-time, immediate, or relatively soon impact player who could potentially turn into a star. Second round, you're looking at a good, above-average starter. Third round, you're looking at a starter. If you look at Washington's drafts leading up to this season, before Adam Peters took the reins, under Ron, there's no wonder why this roster is not particularly great. They don't have draft picks on this team. They don't. There's a reason why this team had so many one-year contracts last year, because the roster just was not good. I didn't necessarily, and this is where I was wrong. A lot of people were saying, well, this is a expansion franchise-like roster. And I was like, I don't know about that. Well, Adam Peters showed you what he thought when he showed up and the entire, like, half of the team was new, right? Like, an entire half of the team was brand new. He turned over everything. You have to nail the draft. It's no coincidence that this team just doesn't have the depth, that doesn't have the ability like Philadelphia to rotate through eight pass rushers, to have an all-pro center, one of the greatest of all time, retire and just throw someone in that fills in and plays well. It's no coincidence that Washington has none of that. And when you look at their roster this year, you're like, well, they've got a lot of needs still. You have to nail the draft. I think they did a good job of that last year. They need to do it again. They need to do it again and again and again and again. And then you'll get to the point where some of these teams are where you can say, you know what? We don't really have big-time needs this offseason. We can give up a couple of first-round picks for Myles Garrett. We can spend $30 million on T. Higgins. Washington doesn't really have that luxury right now, where if you say, let's pay $30 million to T. Higgins, you go, okay, how are they going to address the other corner? How are they going to get an edge rusher? How are they going to do this? How are they going to do that? You're looking at the whole roster almost of positions they need to improve. Ben, you said you got a good stat about the roster not having a lot of draft picks.
Well, just to echo your point that you bring up here, Philadelphia this year, as much as I hate to talk about how successful that organization is, 19 of the 21 players they drafted since 2022 were on the roster this year. They built sustained success through the draft.
Correct.
And that's the model Washington needs to follow.
100%. And when Adam Peters had his opening press conference, I was listening to Linnell say this the other day, and I don't necessarily agree with what he was saying. When they had their opening press conference, what did Adam Peters say? He said he was going to build through the draft, supplement through free agency. And I think he stuck to that. I know a lot of people looked at what he said to G&D last year before his first offseason as a GM, and he said, yeah, we're not going to go out there and spend big. And then they signed like 30 free agents. And people said, he didn't keep his word. No, I think he kept his word. You have to get somebody in those spots that is up to their standard. And frankly, there weren't people in the building to do that, so they had to go sign free agents. To me, how this works when you say build through the draft, supplement through free agency. Danny alluded to this the other day very, very well. Positional value. Where did they draft? Where did they spend? Draft, quarterback, offensive tackle, corner, premium positions. Where did they spend? Linebacker, tight end, positions that aren't premium. So that's what they need to do, is to continue to build this roster where how do you make it so that you can afford all these guys when they come up for contracts and stuff? Well, you draft the guys that are going to cost $30, $40, $50, $60 million at those positions, and you pay the guys that are going to cost $10 to $12, right? So you pay the Frankie Louvu, you draft the Jaden Daniels, right? Like, that's the whole idea. You understand the positional value of the positions I just mentioned. So they're still trying to build through the draft. You look at guys that they are building around, Jaden, Brandon Coleman, Mike Sanders still. Those are premium positions. And so I think they're going to continue to do that. And that's why this roster is in such disarray going into another year. They've got some solid pieces, but they don't have nearly as much as others. So they're going to have to nail the draft, continuing to do that. And look, I mean, there are some positions where you feel like maybe they didn't nail the draft, right? Luke McCaffrey didn't give you a whole lot for a third-round pick. Johnny Newton was solid. He wasn't great. Ben Sinnott was kind of non-existent for a lot of the year. You need to get more out of those guys as it goes forward. But I think when you look at the way that they did that, you're going to have to nail the draft. And if you keep doing that, to Ben's point, you're going to have a roster made up of people that you've brought in, that you've drafted, and that have been there, that know your standards, that know your building, that know your way. And that's going to make a big difference. And that's how you can build a sustained winner. 800-636-1067. I got some more points on this. How does Washington build that sustainable winner? Like Pete Briscoe was saying, all of it's sustainable because of Jaden. But how do they make sure the rest of the roster is up to shape so that they can continue to be one of the best teams in the NFC? We'll take a break. When we come back, we'll continue taking some of your phone calls if you'd like. 800-636-1067. You're listening to Overtime on the Fan. On the Fan, Toby Altizer with you until 10 o'clock. Want to call in 800-636-1067. MGM National Harbor listener lines are open. You can tweet at me at Toby_Altizer. So talking about sustainable success, Pete Briscoe was on with B. Mitch and Finley last week. I think it was last week, sometime recently, and talked about the success of this team from this past season is sustainable because of the quarterback. Now I think it's up to the rest of the organization to make sure that they have the rest of the team ready to go so that they can do that. How do they do that? So we talked through a couple of these things. Now, you know, on the football field, we understand the trenches are huge. And so I'm more so talking philosophically here on some things that they just kind of need to do in order to make sure that this is a sustained winner. We can talk X's and O's about how you want to build a team and stuff at another time. But some things that I've laid out, organizational alignment and proper structure, you've seen that in this team at least last season. So that's good. They're in the right spot there. Nail the draft and definitely the first three rounds. That's something that seemed like they did a good job of last year. Do it again this year. Keep your guys is another one. Keep your guys and make preparations for inevitable player loss, whether it's an injury or free agency. That's something that a lot of teams do a really good job of is, and you draft studs, keep your studs. Don't let them go somewhere else. Don't make them have to move on and trade them or whatever. You know, obviously, if you end up in a bad spot like a New Orleans did and they trade Lattimore, that's different. But Washington hopefully is not in that spot for a long, long time because they've got their quarterback, right? So you don't want to end up in that spot, but keep your guys. Draft studs, develop them, and then keep your dudes. Another one, avoid foolish overpays, whether it's money or draft picks in a trade. And I think this kind of speaks to what we're looking at this offseason. Is T. Higgins going to be worth $30 million? Maybe. Again, I don't even know if T. Higgins is going to hit the market. Who knows? He looks like he's going to get franchise tagged. I don't know that that's official yet. But looks like he's going to get franchise tagged. Cincinnati's going to try to keep him. But the point is, try not to be paying somebody too much money where you're going to have to either eat some dead cap and move on from them, or you're going to be handicapped because of how much you're paying someone. And don't give up too many draft picks and trades. You know, you don't want to give up multiple first-round picks for Myles Garrett, and Myles Garrett, you know, doesn't live up to what he's supposed to be, which is a defensive player of the year kind of candidate. You don't want to give up too much and hinder yourself. So just be careful to not overpay. Not to say that you can't give up some assets to improve your football team, but just don't go overboard. Like I was talking about earlier, sometimes we try to be a little too cute with these things because we get used to playing Madden and we get used to playing these different games. And you're like, ooh, instead of paying him 16, I paid him 14. I saved two. That's great, but just sometimes just pay the two, right? Like, just to make sure you get the guy. We talk about this in drafts sometimes where people are like, oh, man, they drafted that dude at 28. I had him available at 40. Well, okay, maybe that's a little bit of an overdraft, but did you get your guy, right? Like, sometimes you have to understand how this works a little bit, where sometimes you just have to bite the bullet and go after it. So avoid the foolish overpays, but also don't be afraid of being a little bit aggressive. Prepare for your coordinators leaving. This is going to be huge. Prepare that your coordinators, if you're a good football team, will inevitably leave. Unless somehow you're Kansas City and you have Steve Spagnuolo. I don't get how no one ever gives that guy a shot. I know he didn't work in his first stint, but that dude is just constantly creating great defenses that are the reason KC wins, by the way. I love Mahomes, one of my favorite quarterbacks in the league, one of my favorite players to watch. This past year, they weren't winning because of Mahomes. They were winning because of their defense. And somehow no one's interviewing this dude. That's crazy. But look at what happened this offseason for Washington where we're like, whew, no one left. Well, if you have the same success next year, Cliff Kingsbury might be gone. And if suddenly your defense turns into a top 10 unit, Joe Witt might be gone. So you have to prepare. Have contingencies in place. So understand, and I think Dan Quinn knows this, I think they were already prepared if Cliff were to leave. I think more so this season they're going to be. They understand that Cliff probably is gone next season if they play this well again. So who's going to take his spot? Who's ready to step in and take over the play calling? Who's ready to step in and become the offensive coordinator if and when Cliff leaves? So have a plan in place for that where you're working through. Is it Brian Johnson that's going to step in and take that spot? Is it Tavita Pritchard? But have contingencies in place. Another thing, this kind of works with the final two kind of work together. Defense wins championships. You still need a good defense. So don't buy into the idea that offense runs everything in the National Football League like we're told all the time. Yes, offense is hugely important, and sometimes your best defense can be your offense, specifically when you have a quarterback like Jaden Daniels. But look at the teams that win the Super Bowl and tell me they don't have good defenses. Like, look at what Philadelphia did to Kansas City. Look over the last couple of years what the teams are that are in the Super Bowl that win the Super Bowl and where their defense is ranked. Defense still is hugely important, and this one I think is huge for this team as they get going. I don't know that this is hugely important in the next 4 years because they're going to be able to build this roster however they want because of the flexibility of Jaden's contract. But when you pay the quarterback, this changes things. Adaptability. Adaptability is huge here. However Adam Peters decides to build your roster, you have to be able to play to the strengths of that roster. That's what I thought this coaching staff did a heck of a job of this year, was guys weren't playing in spots where they weren't good. They were playing to their strengths. And as time goes on, when you have to change things, play to people's strengths. Look at Kansas City. Tyreek Hill leaves. They know their defense is built up. They didn't still try to be the high-flying Harlem Globetrotters Kansas City Chiefs anymore. They turned into the ground and pound, slow it down, half-court offense Kansas City Chiefs. Right? That's what they did. They adapted to their personnel. You got to be ready to do that. I don't think you have to do that quite yet. You can kind of build this however you want with Jaden on the rookie contract. But in 3 and 4 years, when you start looking at, okay, Jaden's going to get potentially 60, maybe at that point, $70-plus million, this is how we're going to adapt to what we've got on our roster. 800-636-1067, how do they build a sustainable winner? Also want to take a look at some of the mock drafts around various publications on what they have for the Commanders doing at 29, because that's going to be a huge pick as well. Like I talked about, they have to nail the draft. What are they going to do at 29 to improve this football team so the next year they're not just in the NFC Championship game, but they're going to win that thing and get to the Super Bowl? We'll talk about that next here on The Fan.